Wow.
Wasn't 47 and 49 when this all started and where it is today.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what people understand exists technologically and what exists is just, and every year it gets further and further away, so.
Good day. Welcome at the Andere Kant. De Andere Kant is an independent new media newspaper that is published on a weekly basis in the Netherlands. Today, I'm visiting Catherine Austin-Fitz. Catherine Austin-Fitz leads the Solari Report, which is a platform that supports people to live a free and inspired life. Today, we will talk about the open and unanswered questions in the space economy and the arms race that is taking place in space. Hello, Catherine.
Hi, welcome back.
Thank you.
It's
Thank
good
you
to have you here.
So you mentioned in a lot of interviews that that there's an arms race in space and that space is a very important topic to be mindful of. And I started tracking it and I thought, wow, that's really true because there's satellites, space weapons, mining asteroids, exploring space, like living on Mars. There was much more going on than I ever knew about. But I also find that it's difficult to wrap your mind around.
Right.
So I'm very glad that you want to do this conversation. But what I was really wondering about is you're an investment advisor. So what made you interested in space? Because this is not really your specialization.
So space is very, very important and increasingly important to investment. And if you look at investment, you see a line of investment which is totally private. But you also see an enormous line of investment increasingly as more and more of the economy has been sort of socialized through the sovereign government budgets and spending and regulation and credit. So in the United States, we see a real socialization of private investment through the government and, you know, and the central banks. And so more and more, we see that money flow and centralize in a way that it looks private, but it's really driven by government money. So whether as a taxpayer and citizen or as an investor putting money in an index fund, more and more of your and my personal money is getting invested in space. Now, a lot of that investment has been secret. It's becoming more and more overt. But also, it's remarkable. You can talk to people in the investment world, and it's as though space doesn't exist to them. And yet space is becoming more and more and more important to what's going on, you know, on the ground on Earth. And the competition between different parties, both governments and private parties, is growing more and more intense. And as that grows more and more intense, the, you know, the absence of a legal framework in space is causing more and more problems on the ground. So space gets ever more important from a financial standpoint, whether you're coming at it from government money or private money, and the risk issues and the competition issues are getting more and more interesting. So I don't think you can understand what's going on the ground unless you understand what's going on in the sky. And trying to understand what's going on in the sky is very frustrating, as you know. But that doesn't mean, I'm a great believer in framing things with unanswered questions. And I find it wholly unsatisfying to explain anything going on in the markets or in politics today without understanding the role of space.
So about the role of space, like where's all this investment going? What type of technologies and how does it affect the ground?
So the primary investment is going into satellites and other technology that basically drives or influences what's going on Earth. So it's Earth orbit activities. And that's where a for-profit business can happen. So whether you're putting up satellites, whether you're coming up with software and other things that works through satellites or telecommunications, satellites is the sort of economic business. Everything beyond that is highly speculative and tends to be driven by government money. Okay. And competition. And you know, the further out you go from Earth orbit, the more unanswered questions there are. So, you know, there's clearly some kind of crazy thing happening on the moon. You know, the Chinese are, you know, talking about putting an economic development zone up on the far side of the moon. Mm-hmm. And I think it was in 2017 or 18, Nokia and Vodafone were awarded a contract to do a 4G network on the moon. And you're like, what? What's going on in the moon? So, you know, so the moon is something that's clearly part of the competition.
So about the satellites, are we then just talking about like telecommunications and financial clearing? In what ways are these satellites used?
So I think they're being used for both Earth observation, mm-hmm. but then, you know, basically flowing data back and forth. Mm-hmm. So you've got both Earth observation and sort of tracking and learning what's going on Earth. So that's a, you know, that's an intelligent function, but then you have a communications function as well. Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting. I'll never forget talking to a reporter who was a producer who produced very successful producer, and I think it was either CBS or CNN, maybe CBS. They did the sarin gas story, mm-hmm. and the story had been completely vetted by the general counsel, and they published it. It was completely, you know, perfectly done, vetted, very professionally, and then CBS had to retract it, and the producer was fired, even though the facts were right, uh-huh. and everything was right. And I said to her, why did they have to retract? And she said, the Pentagon controls the satellite feeds, and if they shut off CBS's satellite feeds, that's it. You know, if they even hiccup it, it's it. So they're dependent on the global satellite feeds. So, and you could see that. Remember, it wasn't until very recently that the U.S. was the only country that had a complete global positioning, you know, satellite system in place. The Russians mm-hmm. finally got theirs, I think, in 2012, which may have been the start of some of the tensions between the U.S. and Russia. And then the Galileo European system just finally, I think, is in place now. But you know, you could see the dependency both of the financial firms mm-hmm. and the dependency of the media firms on accessing the satellites. And ultimately, that's going to be controlled by the military, at least now.
Because with these satellites, you see that a lot of countries are putting up satellites and they get systems where they can basically monitor the whole Earth.
Right.
So I was wondering, you see this real tendency towards centralization and central control.
Right.
But then with regard to the satellites, you see a lot of different parties and both state and non-state actors. So right. I was wondering, are we still going towards one place where there's a hegemon controlling it? Or is this turning out to be a Wild West with a lot of players?
So it's clearly contributing to the move to a multipolar world from a unipolar world, because the U.S. is still dominant, but mm-hmm. they, you know, with the possible exception of weaponry, we still, you know, certainly from an Earth observation standpoint, they no longer have the dominance they had 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely driving a multipolar world. And the civil, you know, the private side is getting more and more powerful. And the U.S. changed its laws, you know, in the last decade so that that could happen. Mm-hmm. So you're definitely seeing a push to privatize part of space. But the other thing is, it is a wild, wild west. And, you know, I've said many times, the number one greatest fortune, or one of the greatest fortunes of the 21st century, is the guy who figures out space debris.
Yeah.
Because if we're lucky, they're all going to, you know, they're going to throw up so many satellites mm-hmm. and they're going to be so lawless that they just
self-destruct.
You know, we'll, you know, it would certainly be inconvenient if they self-destructed, but I think we'd all be better off. So we have a wonderful subscriber who, when she came out of engineering school, went to work for a private space company. The mm-hmm. first, I think, the first company that tried to do private rocket launches. And she, one night, late at night, she asked the CEO, why are you doing this? It was a very wealthy person. Mm-hmm. And he said, I want to deliver a payload of sand to the Earth orbit. And she thought, why would you want to do that? Because that would wreck all the satellites. Uh-huh. And clearly one of the initial freedom fighters.
Wow. So besides just the communication satellites, you also hear about space weapons. Do you know?
Right.
Yeah. What is the arms race with regard to weaponry?
So that's an area where, as far as I'm concerned, there's no reliable or very little reliable information. Okay. One thing we've seen, and it started with the Gulf War, is essentially the support to navigation of precision munitions. So satellites and things in the Earth orbit being used to direct weapons and make them much more precise in how they attack. I told you there's one theory that some of the fire was really sort of nanobots that are directed, including from satellites. So one of it, part of this is just satellites making weapons smart or smarter. That's part of it. Then the question is, what is the other weaponry there?
Mm-hmm.
Whether in spaceships or, platforms that could use lasers directed at Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Then the question is, the Rod of God is clearly one very powerful weaponry that there's been some disclosure of.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, how is it delivered? Finally, one thing I'm convinced is happening is weather control.
Mm-hmm.
And weather control, depending on the extent of it, is arguably the most powerful weapon, because you have the ability to create an attack on another country or another company or another person and make it look natural.
Yes.
So my guess is whatever weather control is happening, it couldn't be happening without satellites.
I thought it was interesting that you told, the story that there was insider trading before, I think, the
tsunami.
Yeah. Because because for people who are completely new to this, weather control is out of the frame of reference.
It was very funny. So Dr. Mark Skidmore is a wonderful professor from Michigan State University who helped do surveys on the missing money. And one of the reasons you start to, once you understand the extent of the money that's been disappearing since World War II, and you realize the size of the money, you start realizing, I'll never forget, I don't know if you've seen the Phoenix Lights documentary. It's a documentary that hundreds of citizens in Phoenix made. There was this huge spaceship that came floating down. There's a highway that goes right down the side of Arizona. It came floating down the highway, above the highway. Hundreds of people saw it. It was highly, highly documented, and they made a documentary. And I remember looking at the spaceship and thinking, at the time, there was $4 trillion missing. And I said, I bet Lockheed Martin would build that for $4 trillion, So when you look at the size of the money, you start to realize, these kinds of things could go on.
Mm-hmm. Especially if it's a kind of Manhattan project.
Yeah. So one of the greatest interactions I had with subscribers was somebody asked me once, why are you interested in all the UFO activity? And I said, you're talking about $150 trillion of hardware. That's a lot of money. So, who's making it? Where's it being built? Who's getting the contracts? And
who's controlling it?
Yeah, who's controlling it? And so talk about driving the stock market up. So one of my subscribers wrote in and he said, they're all holograms. So that shrinks the trillions, but it's still, to do all those holograms, you're talking about major money.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so,
And why do you need the holograms?
Here's the thing. You have all these things going on this planet. Have you ever read Charles Fort?
No, I heard, I think Joseph Farrell mentions him a couple of times. Yeah.
Right. So Charles Fort was this reporter, I think it was the 1800s, early 1900s, who just followed anomalous activity.
Uh-huh.
And I've been trained to always look at the anomalies and follow them back, because an anomaly is an indication that your model has a crack or maybe you don't know everything. So if you're a risk manager, you're always looking at the anomalies and following them back. Anyway, so Charles Fort looked at all the anomalies, and what you discover when you follow anomalies, the thing's a little weirder than you thought on this planet. Anyway, so I got off track. Where was I in terms of where we were?
We were talking about the weaponry, because what I find interesting as well is that, like, we have the tensions between the US and Russia right now, and people are very concerned about nuclear weapons. But if I start looking at all the other weaponry that appears to be there, then I think, are nuclear weapons still the issue, or are they a distraction?
So here's to a certain extent, the nuclear weapons are important. But if you know, to me, if you look at the history of nuclear testing, mm-hmm. what it says is whatever climate change is, it's a bunch of bunk. Because if you look at upper atmosphere nuclear testing, or all the things we've been doing to the environment using nuclear testing, mm-hmm. whoever's doing that is not concerned about the climate. So that's number one. But number two, I think that nuclear weapons are, you know, if you look at the portfolio of weaponry, mm-hmm. it's the least powerful, useful weapon of many other options. So let me go back. I was telling you about Skidmore. So Skidmore was helping me with the missing money and starting to fathom the extent of the lies related to the government budgets and financials. So at one point, I said to him something about weather warfare, and he was just like, you know, what are you, a conspiracy theorist? And I said, Mark, the Chinese have a Beijing office of weather modification. They've just announced there will be no problem with the weather for the Olympics. They've taken care of that. Just go look at the Beijing weather modification mm-hmm. office. So he did, and he came back and he said, oh my God, they're modifying the, you know, they think yeah. they can control the weather. I said, well, I think they can. Anyway, so he did a bibliography that's now available. It's on our website and on his mm-hmm. website too, of all the academic papers on weather modification. What you realize is this thing is much, you know, the horse mm-hmm. is way further out of the barn than yeah. you would expect. And none of this is discussed or disclosed publicly. It's remarkable to go into the investment world and sit with somebody who's managing billions of dollars who doesn't, you know, even think about space and doesn't know.
Well, I think especially with the weather modification, there's been a lot of good citizen journalism, but it just hasn't broken through to the mainstream.
I, you know, here's the thing. If you sort of roll around the planet, we all live in bubbles, mm-hmm. you know, and we're busy in our bubble. Mm-hmm. And we don't start looking, you know, we don't start opening up the top of the submarine and coming out of the bubble until something happens that makes yeah. us uncomfortable. And it has not been until recently that you started to see the development of media that can handle it. So, mm-hmm. you know, we saw a lot of independent media get started over the last, you know, particularly with the financial crisis. Mm-hmm. But it's only now we're starting to see significant resources go into new media.
Yes.
And new media is now in a position to start to handle something like this.
Yes. So,
right. And I just think there are a lot of people who are beginning to say, okay, why is Mr. Global behaving the way Mr. Global is? You know, let me look behind the curtain.
Yeah, we should know that. It's time that we discover that, especially if you look what's happening with COVID, there's this push for centralization.
Right.
And what you've been explaining, this satellite, like, it's of course the surveillance, the medical surveillance, but the satellite system makes a big part of that. Yeah, I was also wondering, satellites make up a large part of 5G. How do you see 5G play into the space part?
You know, I can't think of anything good that's going to come from 5G.
No.
To me, 5G is designed to make the control grid go. And they're looking to create a system where you can control. For 30 years, we've been building, using digital technology, we've been building a control grid. Mm-hmm. And that control grid manages you one person at a time. So imagine that you had an entire Stasi team tracking you and interacting with you, you know, and you had one every 8 hours. So you had three Stasi teams, 24/7, all year long. Mm-hmm. they want to build that kind of control grid so they can, okay, how are we going to control Elsa with financial tools? How are we going to control her with, you know, surveillance and, you know, sort of interacting with her on a covert basis? How are we going to use mind control to influence she buys this versus that? Mm-hmm. And so you're, you know, they're literally looking to build a control grid that's one person that can manage each person individually, all with AI and software. And 5G is critical to that control grid snapping into place. And if you look at the control that's already happening in the Western world, it's funny, mm-hmm. I have lots of subscribers who are picking where they're going to move in the world, mm-hmm. according to what are the places that have the highest percentage of people that don't have internet access. Yeah. So, and of course, you know, they keep trying to put up more satellites to create Wi-Fi there, whether you want it or not. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Well, I also know that targeted individuals, when they move, they are still being tracked, even though they're not near internet or they,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Although moving around helps. Okay. It does help, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
So who is dominant at this moment?
That, you know, I had asked you if you listened to it. I just did an interview with, so Joseph Farrell and I do a wrap-up of News, Trends, and Stories every quarter. Mm-hmm. So it's an annual wrap-up and a quarterly wrap-up on the Salieri Report. And finally, our unanswered questions got so long. You know, we had more unanswered questions than we had, you know, major events. So we peeled something off and did a two-hour interview on who is Mr. Global. Mm-hmm. And it was really designed to create a framework of the options, mm-hmm. to explain who Mr. Global is and why Mr. Global is behaving the way he is, because the uncertainty is extraordinary. Mm-hmm. And the option, you know, there's more than a few options. And it, when you have that many possibilities, it gets hugely complex to kind of hold a framework and manage it. And but it's very important, because if there is one sort of piece of intelligence I would love to have, it's what are the risks Mr. Global is managing? And that will tell you why he's behaving the way he's behaving.
What kind of risks are you thinking of?
So who controls in space? Mm-hmm. So what is controlling in space human, or is it non-human? Is it from this planet? Is it from another planet? Does it relate to interdimensional travel or mm-hmm. time travel? So who up there has the biggest gun? That's the question. And we don't know the answer. So if you're Mr. Global and somebody else has a bigger gun, mm-hmm. so for example, Richard Dolan has a theory of a breakaway civilization, which I think is true. And that is a group of humans who decided that they would go off and form a separate civilization, separate laws, separate culture. And they could do it because they advanced technology and could steal a huge amount of money mm-hmm. from ours. You know, and that's why I'm so interested in the offshore havens. Are they still in the Cayman Islands? Are they, you know, on the moon? So we have a breakaway civilization that's very powerful and has enormous resources. Mm-hmm. And in many respects, it's more powerful than many governments, if not all governments. Mm-hmm. And yet the governments are having to interact and pretend that civilization doesn't exist.
Why do they cooperate with that?
You know something? I think they're outgunned, is my guess. Yeah. Or they're incentivized. I mean, you are seeing more and more power go private. Mm-hmm. And the governments have been steadily taken over by the banks and corporations that are potentially financed or owned by the breakaways. So,
and do you think the breakaways, that is that one group? Is it multiple groups?
There's no way to know. Okay. I mean, if you look at the theories of private forces and breakaway forces. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things, for example, it's clear is that flight has been going on this planet for thousands of years. So we did an interview, I don't know if you saw the Salera report on the, what's it called? The, I'm trying to remember what the name is. You know, the spaceship mystery in the 1800s.
Ah, yeah.
Where all across, you know, there was like
Walter Busley has written about that.
Right. Yeah. So there were, you know, spaceship or flying machines basically landing, getting out, buying groceries, getting back up, telling people they were from New York or California, and taking off again. So this was way before the Wright brothers. Anyway, then we have Dr. Fairless done a lot to talk about the fact that at the end of World War II, the German government surrendered, but the Nazis never did, and were able to launder a huge amount of money out and people, including getting those people reincorporated into the American national defense. One of the best books on World War II that I love is Trading with the Enemy, and it basically describes the White House and senior levels in the administration being forced to allow companies in Ohio to ship ball bearings to the Germans to keep their tanks going during the war. Oh, no, it's, you know, you basically see a meta structure that's running both sides.
Yes.
And then, you know, when the war is over, they launder the people and the money back into the national security state and just keep on going as if nothing ever happened. So whether it's, you know, it's called Nazi International or whatever that metastructure was or the breakaways, you've got all these different groups. And if you look at the amount of money they've sucked out of government, you know, they now have significantly more assets than the sovereign governments.
Yes, most, well, the governments are not really sovereign anymore and they're broke.
Right.
Yeah.
So their operations are controlled by the banks and corporations. And they've basically, you know, they've issued tons of debt and now that money's been sucked out and privatized over here. So, you have significant power here, including the ability to field weaponry.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, I'm thinking. Yeah.
Well, it's funny. I don't know if you've watched the James Bond movies, but it really is Spectre.
Ah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I thought what you said, the Nazi part is interesting because to me, James Talbot talks about how the Alan Dulles, he basically sets up all these red lines for the...
right.
Yeah.
So Dulles was in Basel during the war. He was in Switzerland, and he was running money back and forth. He was helping IBM, because remember, IBM was doing all the databases. So they're doing all the databases, or they're doing a lot of the databases and software on the smart grid now. And they were doing the databases on the slave labor camps during the war in Europe. So and Dulles is running money and people back and forth, you know, before, during, and after the war.
So he sets up these red lines to Argentina, but he also is pivotal in Operation Paperclip.
Right.
And then I think it's Joseph Farrell, he talks about how Martin Bormann sets up this, what he calls Nazi International, but this whole corporate structure to funnel out the money. So so a lot of that Nazi loot has never been recovered. And if you look at the history of the European Union, then again, like it's Alan Dulles who wants a United States of Europe and through CIA seed funding is really kind of like orchestrating the start of this. But also, again, a lot of Nazi figureheads being involved in setting up the European Union who never were tried at Nuremberg. So... yeah, if you start to put all these puzzle pieces together, then this seems like a major influence.
So one of the theories is the Bilderberger Group was set up to manage the loot. So they seized a tremendous amount of money or laundered it out. So the Bilderbergers were there to manage the reinvestment of that money. The loot that got divided up at World War II had a major impact on how things evolved thereafter. And, you know, that was part of the covert financial stash that's just evolved and grown and grown and grown.
And if you even look at IG Farben, because that's a chemical company, but it took a long time for it to be divided up. But the current chemical and life sciences and biotech companies, they all have roots to right. the same type of operation, science.
Right. So I think it's really important when you look at World War II, you have to study what happened to Admiral Byrd in Antarctica. And then what happened to Farrell's followed it. You need to study the assassination of Forrestal, because that was the what happened to Admiral Byrd in Antarctica, and then the Forrestal assassinations are two key points of basically calcifying and creating this secret financial system. And then we're off to the races. Mm-hmm. And I had to go back and see how strategic that was to see how much money had gone dark. Mm-hmm. And then when you understand how much money has gone dark, then you realize, you know, all these kooky theories are possible because the money was there to finance them.
But so there's also
a lot
the secrecy.
Going on in space.
But there's also the secrecy structure which makes it really difficult to verify right. which theory is possible.
Right. We did a wonderful Salieri report with a attorney from, she's American, but she was teaching in New Zealand about secrecy. Mm-hmm. And it was Lawrence Wilkerson, who'd been Powell's chief of staff at the State Department, called me and he said, we have a peer-reviewed thing on secrecy and I can't wait for you to see it. I can't tell you what it is, but when it comes out, I'll let you know. And we published it, and it explains how a very intelligent, well-educated person could be very well-read and educated and have no idea any of this was going on. I mean, she basically walks through how secrecy is engineered and sort of the matrix is engineered so you cannot know it. And many of our subscribers said, you know, that was one of the most important Salieri reports, because suddenly I could accept, okay, these things could be going on and I wouldn't know. So, and one of the things to understand is secrecy is phenomenally expensive. Mm-hmm. It's phenomenally expensive because if I'm going to build an underground base, mm-hmm. and I think a lot of money has gone into building. If you look at what's going on underneath the ground, it's very busy on this planet. But if I build an underground base and it costs a dollar, mm-hmm. if I build it and keep it secret, it costs $100. Do you know, it explodes the expenses of doing these things on a secret basis.
So you need to control the media and education.
Right, but you also need to have incredible surveillance and track to make sure that everybody is supposed to be not talking is not talking.
So that's not very productive.
No. And I will tell you, the biggest job program on this planet is disinformation and basically making sure people don't communicate and talk. I mean, I think one of the goals of COVID was to stop everybody from, you know, there was too many conversations going on. People were figuring out, you know, oh, they're stealing my money.
So what can we do to bring more transparency?
Well, I think the first thing we have to do is we have to define unanswered questions. So one of the reasons intelligent and capable people don't want to talk about all of this is it's just too wiggly, there's too much disinformation, it's too uncomfortable, and you know, the intelligence agencies do a fabulous job of attacking you if you try and have this conversation. Mm-hmm. So for many years, every time I would lead aspects of this conversation at the Salieri Report, I would just get barrages, you're not credible, you're not. And I finally said, you know something, I'm going to go over here and be not a credible person because I want to deal with real money and real risks. Mm-hmm. And if I can't deal with real money and real risks, I'd rather be not credible and deal with real money and real risks than be over here in La La Land. Mm-hmm. So, but it was very lonely because literally the independent financial media just, you know, that was it. I was out. So it was a very lonely ride. But it has to be a ride that we're now willing to take, because all the questions we have about what's going on the planet, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, why did we fake a pandemic? Mm-hmm. I mean, we're dealing with a global coup d'etat,
Yes.
And you can't deal with a global coup d'etat unless you understand who has what power.
Mm-hmm.
Because yes. the reason they're being successful in the coup is they have the power to implement a smart grid that controls us one person at a time, or influences us one person at a time. And if we're going to beat that, we need to see it. So, and we can't see, we don't have enough intelligence and information to figure out what the truth is,
mm-hmm.
but we can frame the uncertainty and start to have intelligent conversations about, you know, what's really going on.
When you start asking these questions, what is your strategy for sifting through what is disinformation and what are real clues that help you understand this?
So I have a whole lot of strategies, none of which are perfect. So money is my tool to map things.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that money doesn't lie. The problem is there's much going on here that relates to things. You know, money's very good for mapping earthbound things.
Mm-hmm.
And much of this is earthbound or relates to earthbound, but, you know, it's not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be careful. The second thing is a good night's sleep, because a lot of times I just can't figure it out and say, I'll think about it tomorrow. So you have to have a lot of patience and you have to be able to live with uncertainty. The other thing is that if you collect enough intelligence and information from many different events, you start to get pattern recognition.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why asking uncertain questions and embracing the uncertainty is helpful, because then suddenly something snaps into place and you go, ah, okay.
Yes.
Yeah. So pattern recognition through time is very, very helpful. I think the other thing is I've always believed that we can figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm confident we can understand.
But you accept the uncertainties.
And I'm willing to live with the uncertainties.
Yeah.
I'm willing to embrace the uncertainties. And, I believe that we can know. And I've always felt like I wanted... You know, I felt when I was a child like I was dropped off on a primitive planet, and I got it in my head, oh, well, maybe we can make it, you know, non-primitive, mm-hmm. and that would be fun to do. That uh-huh. would be worth dealing with the primitive planet. And so, you know, I've always held out the hope that we could get to a place of sort of high civilization, and I know that this is the door that has to be walked through mm-hmm. to get there, because the... You know, a lot of people explain what's happening by Mr. Global's bad.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that. That's not been my personal experience. I mean, I've run into extraordinary corruption at the top and extraordinary corruption at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And you just ultimately can't explain what's going on just from, corruption. So I want to know what are the risks Mr. Global's managing, because I can't understand that position unless I know what I would do if I was in that position.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't know what I would do unless I understand the risks. So to me, this is one of my favorite quotes from Confucian is, the way out is through the door. Why is it no one will avail themselves of this method? So this is the door you have to walk through.
Mm-hmm.
And all I can tell you is, if this is the door you want to walk through, you have to go down a lot of really weird rabbit holes. It's been a fun journey going down all these different rabbit holes. So
to bring it back to the very mundane, like at this moment, we see this tension between the US and Russia and also the US and China, and also quite some...
And between governments and private.
Yes.
Because the money that's being poured in, we're about to publish an article on SPACs.
Mm-hmm.
The money that's being poured into the private side is unbelievable. It's just unbelievable.
And somebody's probably controlling that private side. It's a way to make it secret.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it's a way to make it secret and a way to get it in the stock market that doesn't mm-hmm. have a lot of introspection to it.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how do you see that struggle playing out at this moment?
You know, I don't have a clear picture of mm-hmm. this. You're continuing to see enormous investments by the government. It is clear that the controller in space is whoever backs the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you if you ultimately want to understand who controls the oceans and who controls space, mm-hmm. watch which reserve currency is trading where. Mm-hmm. So whoever backs the dollar is still the dominant player. But it's clear a great deal is being privatized. And I see the big move, not China versus Russia versus the U.S. That's mm-hmm. kind of the entertainment space. I see the big move is it's all being privatized.
Yes.
So, and that's the big move that's happening. They're trying mm-hmm. to move everything. And China may be doing it differently, but in the West, they're moving everything to the private side.
So do you think the dollar will remain the reserve currency?
So I think what they want to do is they want to get the control grid up. Mm-hmm. And if they succeed, they're going to go to all digital financial control system. Mm-hmm. And essentially from a retail level, that ends currency.
Yes.
In other words, if you have complete control, you don't really need currencies. I mean, they'll call them CBDC or currencies, yeah. but...
It's your social credit.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's just your weekly allowance from the controllers, if you're lucky.
Yeah. If you behave well.
Right. So it's a slavery system.
Yeah.
So people don't have assets and they don't really have currencies. They have, you know, they are allocated controlled provision, and it's a slavery system.
Operated from space.
Operated from with digital technology, in which mm-hmm. space is a very important player. And it's too bad because there's a lot going on in space we want and need. In other mm-hmm. words, if you look at the power of what space could be, mm-hmm. You know, not everything going on in space is about control. And that's, you know, one of the problems I have doing investment is there's a lot of great things going on in space mm-hmm. that I love. Then there's a lot of control things I hate. How do you get the good without the bad?
Yeah, I had this conversation recently with friends because he said, well, technology is always neutral, so you can use it for good and for bad. But then we were talking about these more advanced technologies like the AI or smartphones, the internet. And I said they all come from basically black projects
right.
out of the deep state. And they've been given to us. Not, I feel really like Trojan horses
right.
With very ill intent. So even though I can see that they have a lot of benefits and like if I think...
Right, your
yeah.
smartphone is a surveillance device.
Yes.
They got you to use it by telling you you could use it for all these neat-seeking things.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a surveillance device. That's its purpose.
Yeah, and almost worse in some cases.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So...
So let me make a couple suggestions because mm-hmm. it's very easy when you try and map out the unanswered questions of space or who is Mr. Global and what's going on mm-hmm. in space as it relates to what Mr. Global's sort of goals or risks are. It's very easy to get lost down the different rabbit holes, but there are a couple of very good sources.
Mm-hmm.
So one source, I like to go back in history. A couple of recommendations I would make if you really want to understand the system and how it evolved is to read David Talbot's book, The Devil's Chessboard,
mm-hmm.
on the Kennedy assassination. Because when you understand how many different parts of the machinery came together to kill the president, it's extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
It is a Manhattan Project in and of itself, and Dulles, of course, ran it. So I think it really helps to understand how deeply invested the establishment has been since 1963 in the covert side
mm-hmm.
and running things from the covert side. So I think that's very helpful. Another thing that is unbelievably helpful is Richard Dolan's book, UFOs for the 21st Century Mind, because he tries to not only frame what's going on in space, but all the different way it impacts the secrecy here on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
I am very interested in the Forrestal assassination. Forrestal was a partner at Dillon Reed. I was a partner at Dillon Reed, but and we both had similar experiences in Washington, although I made it out alive, he didn't. But the Forrestal assassination brings up many of these questions because a decision was made with the Forrestal assassination and then the Kennedy assassination to keep everything secret. Mm-hmm. And once you keep everything secret and the financial engineering explodes as it has, you know, then you have this enormous bifurcation of people living in the official reality and people over here dealing with the covert. Mm-hmm. And they become harder and harder to manage. And part of what we've seen with the global coup for the last 2 years is they can't manage it any. It's too hard to have this Disney world over here in the official reality and whatever they're doing. It's too complicated. Yes. So they're just saying to hell with it, central control, you know, tell these guys to go, you know, we'll just take all the assets and give them a weekly allowance and tell them to shut up. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. Those are the three books that you recommend to.
Yeah. Those books will help you understand how we got here. And until you understand how we got here, mm-hmm. it's hard to imagine that all this stuff has been going on the planet and you didn't notice.
Yes.
You know, and the reality is most people are really busy. They don't notice.
Well, you really need to take some time and you have to be willing to have a very open mind. Because if I think about, like, there was a moment for myself where I broke through the propaganda barrier. Uh-huh. And where you really see like a big lie in the mainstream media and think, I need to find answers. But that's years ago. And if I think all the steps I've went through, like each time I discover something and I think, oh, now I know how it works. And then you see another field and you think, oh, there are the lies too. Or so it's not yet. So you have to be willing to have an open mind. And I also think to stay grounded.
Right.
Because some things that you discover, I think a lot of people around the COVID situation, they discover that things are really not right. as they are being told. And I see also people who get kind of mentally unstable.
Right. So, yeah, so to me, the most important thing is to stay grounded. So, there, you know, we have the macro and we have micro. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is sort of me and this is, you know, my other, whether it's my community, my family, whatever. There has to be a balance between macro and micro. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to, you know, read Dolan's book and understand more about the UFO phenomenon, what it means, and the covert side of the money, you also have to make sure you have a healthy local food system or else you're going to starve.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing I can tell you is whatever the secret space program phenomena is, mm-hmm. I would not want to trust them or depend on them for food because you're going to eat insects and synthetic food. So I suggest you get busy building a local fresh food system. And I found that, you know, for a lot of people, gardening keeps them grounded. Okay, uh-huh. So it's, you know, ultimately we're all responsible for, you know, all the sort of immediate impacts and essential needs and services in our life. Mm-hmm. And I like to watch the macro because, you know, I like to see the Scud missile flying in before it hits. Uh-huh. You know, so I like to turn the boat before the iceberg. So looking at the big picture is helpful, but it's only helpful if you can live a free and inspired life at the micro. And you can't live a free and inspired life if you're down the rabbit hole, scared to death. Yeah. Oh my God, time travel is real. They're going to show up. You know, the hardest one for me, interestingly enough, is because a lot of what we're talking about is the invisible realms. Mm-hmm. So yes, the rod of God is invisible to you and me, but it's rocking our world. Mm-hmm. But there are also spiritual realms. And realms of consciousness. I mean, the more you learn about how intelligence works as a non-local phenomena, the more mm-hmm. you realize spiritually and energetically, there's a lot more going on in this world. I mean, I came mm-hmm. from Wall Street. I was a material girl. So learning about the energetic and spiritual world was quite shocking to me. You know, it's like, there really are ghosts? You know, I had a frightening drive once from Memphis back to Hickory Valley, Tennessee, where my home base is, and my pastor and I used to say there are two people in Hickory Valley and who's who in America. One was me and one is a dear friend who runs the Heritage Plantation. And so here's the matriarch of Hickory Valley, very fabulous woman. Her family's been in the Tennessee Banking Association, you know, since it started, you know, very grounded. And she and my pastor just talking the whole hour and a half back from Memphis about ghost stories and all the ghosts who live in Hardeman County. And I'm like, holy crap, I had no idea this is going on. So, you know, so in the invisible realms, we've all been trained to be hyper-materialist, whether it's the secret things going on and the covert money going on, or, you know, what's mm-hmm. happening spiritually and energetically. If you want to get a real balance, you've got to, you know, you've got to go to the, let's call this the visible and the invisible. Mm-hmm. And we need to see both the invisible and the visible at the macro level and the micro level and stay in balance to do that. So I just want to tell you one more story. I told you the Tiller story.
No.
Ah. So there are these magic moments on the Salier Report when something happens, you learn something, and it just rocks your world. Mm-hmm. So Bill Tiller was the head of material sciences at Stanford. And he was able to raise money to do private research. So he raised private money to do scientific research on whether human intention could change reality, including at great distances. Mm-hmm. And he was able to prove that it was. In other words, our intention can change what happens. Mm-hmm. And the more you understand Tiller's work and what he discovered, the more optimistic you get about what's possible. Uh-huh. Anyway, I was interviewing him, and in the pre-interview, I said to him, "Oh, Dr. Tiller," because I'd been doing a lot of work with community prayer, and I was very enthusiastic about community prayer. And I said, "Dr. Tiller, you know, I'm very interested in community prayer. What do you think?" And he was very silent for a while, and then he said, "Well, you have to be very careful." He said, if the people doing the praying are coherent, it helps. If they're incoherent, it makes things worse. And this bell went off in my head, and I said, you know, I need to slow down and just become more coherent. So when you look at who is Mr. Global, or you look at who's going on in space, what you need to do as you balance the macro and micro and the visible and the invisible is you need to stay coherent. Mm-hmm. And if you're not coherent, if looking at these questions makes you incoherent, don't do it.
No. So first take time, work in the garden, feel comfortable, right. Play with your kids.
Bubble baths. Bubble baths. So spa day, yeah. So I think, you know, I like to learn sort of in a spiral out where, you know, whatever I add, it's coherent. And I'm a very intuitive person, so I can learn a piece, but then I have to go just let it digest and integrate. Mm-hmm. And that's an intuitive process. It's not an intellectual process.
So, no.
Right.
So, Catherine.
So what's going on in space?
Yes.
Who knows?
Thank you for this conversation.
Thank you.
It's been very interesting, elucidating. And there are still a lot of open questions, but I think especially with your entry marks, it helps us to ask these questions and do the research and stay grounded. So
whatever is going on in space, it's swinging around a lot of money.
And it's impacting our daily lives.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So thank you.
You're welcome. Got it? Okay.
Wow.